This shiur will be dedicated to the neshama of
Elka
Reina, Bas Shlomo Michael. The neshama should have an aliyah in Gan Eden. The subject of today's class on Parshas Vayetze is a second look, a careful reading of the story of the building of Beit Yaakov. I don't mean the school system. Beit Yaakov is the house of Yaakov. And we will see a couple of curious things. Number one, it took a lot of creativity, sacrifice, and initiative to build Beit Yaakov. It was a combination of some type of deceit, or you might say mitzvah haba'al yedei avera, type of thing, something that was done with some type of deception. It was done with a lot of good intentions, with prayers, bartering, substituting, all kinds of creative ways to build the house of Yaakov. And all of these efforts, all of these little ploys that we will read about, all were the brainchildren of the mothers. Yaakov had very little to do with any of these plans and concoctions of how they would eventually bring forth Klal Yisrael. He simply was the one who willingly accepted whatever the Imahos decided to do. And we will see that the struggle to build Beit Yaakov was not a simple easy path of easy decisions. We're talking about women who did their best and made complicated and hard choices to get to a goal that they knew was of absolute importance. And along the way, they sacrificed their personal happiness. They sacrificed emotional satisfaction. They sacrificed everything. They sacrificed, in the end, their lives. And certainly Rachel and all to achieve something greater than their particular satisfaction for their particular individual life. What they built in the end was much bigger than them themselves. And we will see this story, but in order to understand what they were doing and with such devotion and such drive, such ambition, such sacrifice to do this, we have to understand the broad framework. They were building a bayit, a house, the house of Yaakov. Now, the concept of the house of Yaakov, the concept of building a house for Hashem, a place where there will be, the Shekhinah will dwell and will be the nucleus and the core of the Jewish people, is something exclusive to Yaakov. Because when he has that dream on Har HaMoriah and he wakes up, he says, in Pasuk Yitzayin, Perek Chaf Ches, Vayira, he fears, and he says, Ma Nora Hamakom Hazeh, this Makom is fearsome, awesome. Einze, this is nothing but Beit Elokim. This is the house of Elokim, and this is Shar HaShamayim, this is the gateway leading to Shamayim. Of course, he's referring to this place. This place is going to be established one day as a bayit, as a house for Hashem. And he makes that commitment that he will come back here and he will build a matseva here and he will establish this place. And much later in history, the great-great-great-great-grandchild of Leah, David HaMelech, buys this place and turns it eventually into the place for the Beis HaMikdash. Yaakov establishes this now. And he recognizes that here in this place, this will be the point of connection for his family, which did not exist yet, and the point of connection between this world and the next world. So he calls the place a bayit. But before he calls the place a bayit, he calls the place a makom. Okay? We have to understand the word makom, and then its application as bayit, and then see the bayit, the house that was built by Yaakov, and the contributions of the women in the building of this house. What is makom? This is the first question. You know, it's interesting. It's one of Hashem's names, and therefore it's one of the ways that Hashem conducts the world. when we talk about the names of Hashem, we're talking about not the nature of God himself, but how he conducts the world, with what attributes that we can relate to, names we give attributes. Of course, you know the famous ones. Elohim is Din, and Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is Rachamim. And Makom is one of the names, so to speak, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, we are told that whenever we understand one of the names of Hashem, we have to emulate that name, right? So, Mahu Rachum Afata Rachum. We emulate that attribute of Hashem. Interestingly enough, we do not attribute Mahu Dayan. We don't emulate Mahu Dayan Afata Dayan. Like, he's a judge, you be a judge. We do really don't emulate that one. We leave that to based in certain circumstances, but that's not a midah we aspire to emulate. That's Hashem's. But certainly regarding the 13 midot harachamim, we try to emulate all of them. But if one of the midot of Hashem is makom, that's one of Hashem's names, that also falls into the category of mahu afata. You should also be a makom. So we need to know what is makom, because this is the crux of what the mothers and Yaakov are building here. Makom. So, in order to understand Makom, we begin to understand, we have to see how Chazal explain it, and Chazal say the following. Hashem, trying to define what Makom is, Hashem is Mikomo Shel Olam, the place that the world exists in, Ve'ein Ha'olam Mikomo, but this world is not Hashem's place. So Hashem is the makom of the whole world, but this world is not the makom of Hashem. Hashem is mikomo shel olam, ve'ein ha'olam mikomo. The world is not his makom. So to understand this, the best example I could imagine, that I could figure out, which is not a perfect example, is the example of the fetus and the mother. Would it be true to say that the mother is mikomo, the place of the fetus? But would it also be true to say that the fetus is not the place of the mother? Right? Is mikomo shel olam, is the place that the world exists in, but eina olam mikomo, but this world is not the place that Hashem exists in. This world doesn't contain Hashem. So the fetus doesn't contain the mother. However, is it true to say that the fetus is animated by the life force of the mother? Of course. And the fetus might even look like the mother, represent the aspirations of the mother one day, come to be an extension of the mother, always be linked to the mother, derive its identity from the mother. All these things, yes. However, the fetus does not contain the mother. If I bake a cake, that means the cake is not synonymous with me. So here we have an idea that we have to understand what makom means and understand that our place vis-a-vis makom. Hashem is the makom of the whole world, so to speak, envelops the whole world. All is contained within the force, the power of what we call Hashem. However, this world does not in any way contain a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Just to be clear for a moment, okay? People, Hashem is here, Hashem is there, you know, and all that. But honestly, okay, would it be true to say Hashem is in this paper? We don't talk like that. We don't say Hashem is contained in a physical object. I can step on this paper. I can throw this in the garbage. I can burn it. Hashem is not in this paper. That's not the way we speak. But it would be true to say Hashem is everywhere. Hashem is everywhere, but not in this paper. Then we have a limited God. God is everywhere, but not in physical things. Not in the desk, and not in the rug, and not in the sefer, and not in the tape recorder. So he's only in certain... We don't speak like that either. Okay? So what we need is a working explanation of where is Hashem, so to speak, and we explain this in Kedusha. We say Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. Mufrash, Mufrash, Mufrash. That is the definition of Kadosh, separated. Transcendent, transcendent, transcendent. Hashem is not contained in the physical world. But if we just leave it at that, we have a removed and uninvolved God who is not... it's a watchmaker theory. He set the world in motion and abandoned it. We don't believe in that. So then we explain ourselves and develop it further by saying, Malo kol ha'aretz kavodo. The whole world is filled with his kavod, with his honor. Now what that means is, although Hashem is mufrash from this world, not contained in anything physical in this world, at the same time, this entire world is an expression of and is brought to life by and is animated by the kavod of Hashem, the glory of Hashem, the life force that Hashem has instilled into this world. So we can never say half of that without the other. If we only say Malokola Aretz Kavodo, if we only say the world is filled with Hashem's kavod, and we don't say Mufrash, 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 separated, 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 we end up in a pantheistic idea, which is nature is God, all of nature is God itself. Which we don't agree with this either. So we say Kadosh, 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 Mufrash, and then we say Malokola Aretz Kavodo, the whole world is filled with His glory. So we really are holding to get together two seemingly opposite concepts, but this is the Jewish opinion. It doesn't allow us to say there's a removed and remote God, and it doesn't allow us to say there's a physical embodiment of a God either, which is the extremes that other religions have gone to. A physical, you know, by the Christians, He's embodied physically, they drink His blood through the wine of the sacrament, they eat His flesh through the wafer, you know, that's what they do. He's embodied physically. And then you have, of course, ancient paganism and so many religions coming from that said He's too remote and can't be involved, which led to those ramifications. In any case, so we have makom, we have the concept that Hashem is mikomo shel olam without imagining that this world contains Hashem. When Hashem is mikomo shel olam, that means that it's the coordinates of this world. This world exists within a greater picture called makom. Notice that whenever there is a human being goes through a situation in life where they feel as if their cushion has been ripped out from under them, as they are anchorless, they are placeless, displaced, they have nothing to hold on to, they are without a framework to think within, they don't know how to think because they're confused and there's nothing that makes sense and nothing that they relied upon, is whatever they relied upon has been removed, and they are in a situation of placelessness, feeling displaced. We speak to them using the word hamakom. Hamakom yenachem eschem besoch shar avele tzion v'Yerushalayim. When somebody is sick, hamakom yirapecha, Hashem should heal you. Okay? When the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim and feeling abandoned, baruch hamakom baruchu. Baruch Shomer Haftacha. So they were the classical example of strangers displaced without a home, without a land, without anyone to protect them, to give them any type of security. That's in the Haggadah. So whenever we speak about finding our security in this world, when we have no security, when we have no framework, when we have nothing to ground us, or what grounded us is removed from us, we refer to Hashem as Makom. Here is Yaakov. Who is Yaakov in the beginning of this parsha? If you read in the Pshat, he is the prototype of the displaced person. Sent away from home, he doesn't have his parents' support, his brother is vowed to kill him, he has no wife, he has no children, he has no money, he has no place. He is completely alone in the world. And the first thing that the Torah assures us is, Vayifka b'makom. He confronts a place. He bangs into a place, so to speak. He comes face to face with a makom. When he comes to Har Moriah, the first awareness that Yaakov has is this is the makom. This is the makom that ultimately the entire world finds its place within. This gives the logic, the coherence, and this place gives the framework to function within. So you have the quintessential person without anchor, without framework, immediately confronting makom. Vayifka b'makom. The rest of the story of Vayetze is the story of transition, where Yaakov himself, who is described in the beginning of the parsha as the displaced person who finds his structure and finds his strength in his security in makom, is transformed into the makom himself. Yaakov and his family, on their leaving Lavan, have become the makom. The Beit Yaakov, the house of what would be the Jewish people that has been formed, is now considered to be the makom. And this makom moves through history and through time and through place. We take the makom with us. If you look at the last psukim of the parsha, Parak Lamed Beis Pasuk, Bays. For Yaakov, and this Chumash, it's 103. Very end of the parsha. Look at the words. VaYaakov halach ledarko. Yaakov went on his way. And look at the next words. VaYifku bo malachei Elokim. The malachim of Hashem that he had seen at that makom in the beginning, where he had come and, so to speak, confronted this place. Now those malachim come and he is the makom and they confront him. They, so to speak, bump into him. Vayifka'u bo. They come and have an experience where he is makom and they come face to face with him. Vayifka'u bo malachei Elokim. The circumstances have totally changed. The roles have changed. He is makom and his bayit is makom and we have carried the makom. What was established on Har HaMoriah and all of those values and ideals, although that has not been our, we haven't had that for thousands of years, we have not been lost strictly because we carry that with us. We are makom ourselves. Everything that that place teaches us and that place immortalizes is within the Jewish family and the Jewish people, and we carry it through the generations no matter where we are and where we find ourselves. We are never displaced. We are never without a framework. We always carry makom with ourselves. But Yomer Yaakov Kasher Ra'am. Yaakov said when he saw the Malachim, Machane Elokim Zeh, this is the camp of Hashem. But Yikoshem HaMakom Ahu Machanayim, and he called that place Machanayim, Shte Machano. There are two camps. And Chazal say, the Machane of the Malachim and his camp, his Machane. He is also the Machane Elokim. So this is a story of him becoming makom. We said, ma hu afata, so how Hashem is, so we should emulate Hashem. It is possible for a human being to be a makom, to be a place. It is possible for the Jewish home, and it is expected that the Jewish home is the makom, the place of absolute solid values that never change, that cannot be interfered with. A Jewish home that is set up is a makom for Torah, a makom for tzedakah, a place for Torah, a place for tzedakah, a place that one retreats to and always finds the same basic values at work. And if the person leaves their home, they take the makom with them in their heart as they travel through life and through all of their circumstances. A person must emulate Hashem and also be a makom, be as solid as a makom in their own mind and in the way they go through life. And that is why the Jewish people have survived, because we take our makom with us. Now, this is the broad framework, but what happens is that in building this Beit Yaakov, the house of Yaakov, this makom, and becoming eventually called a makom, is we see that this is not a simple little fairy tale story of a perfect little idyllic existence of a mother and a father and their perfect little children. As we said, building this makom took a tremendous amount of creativity and initiative, self-sacrifice. I mean, all kinds of things went into this. And we see that it was the Mahos specifically only, really, who built this house through their enterprising ways. And what we have to look at is what made up this Beit Yaakov. What are the character traits of the mothers? And they were very different, Leah and Rachel, of course. And we see that there are many paths. There are many ways of becoming a makom. A person, there are many ways people serve Hashem, many ways people are loyal to Hashem, many ways people approach the world, and each one is acceptable and equivalent and can still provide that strong foundation, even through different expressions, different ways of behaving. So we have Rachel and Leah. Okay? We need to make sure when we read this story that we are reading carefully, we are guided by the pshat, and we are guided by Divrei Chazal, because this is not literature. As we've said so many times, Torah doesn't write in essay form, and it is completely unacceptable to read into the Chumash anything that is not there or that Chazal have not told us. We have absolutely no right to infer, to come to our own conclusions. It's just not scholarly. It's not acceptable. It's not honest. So we have to be careful about what we read. And first we have to begin to understand a little bit about the dynamic in the home. And of course we come to that uncomfortable situation, that uncomfortable reality of Rachel and Leah's different position in the house. So we're looking at Pasuk 90, page 93, Pasuk Lamed in Perek Chavtes. And we understand that prior to this, Lavan had made the switch, of course we know, between Rachel and Leah. We understand that Rachel and Leah were, Rachel was complicit in this. Rachel made a decision here. And we've spoken about this in the past. Rachel made a decision here to save her sister the tragic fate of marrying Esav, to allow her sister to be part of Beit Yaakov that would be built, to let her have a portion in it too, because that's all she really wanted. It's the ultimate act of self-sacrifice, no question. We explained the Imahos were in charge of doing the Tikkun on Chava sin, and here she gives her sister happily with love. And there's no greater act of Mesiras Nefesh than this. And Yaakov, we see, has no words with Rachel about this. All we know is that he spoke to Lavan. What did you do to me? Don't you know you tricked me? I worked for Rachel. He has no words in the Pshat at all. The Torah doesn't reveal a thing if he spoke or what he spoke to Rachel about this. But we are giving a little insight into his deepest, you know, the truths in his heart. In Pasuk Lamed, it says, Vayavo gam el Rachel, he also married Rachel. Vayehav gam et Rachel mileah, and he loved also Rachel in addition to Leah. He loved Rachel beyond, you might say, beyond the love that he had for Leah. The Torah never tells us that Yaakov himself had a feeling of hatred for Leah. That is not the words of the Torah. The Torah says, Vayar Hashem, and God saw, Kisnua Leah, that Leah was hated. Now, don't imagine for a second that Yaakov Avinu, who is considered by Chazal the most perfect of the Avot, was guilty of transgressing the mitzvah of Al Tisna Achicha Bilvavecha, don't hate your friend, your compatriot, your Jewish brethren in your heart. He's not guilty of this, of the Avera of do not hate. He's not guilty of chas v'shalom. And what do we mean when Hashem saw that she was hated? Is he guilty? Is he guilty of speaking lashon hara about her, or being over mitzvahs ase, mitzvahs lo ase, of insulting her chas v'shalom, to be mevaze, embarrassing a person? God forbid, did he hit her? But what do we mean hatred? My grandfather explains like this, reading carefully the words. Vayehav gam et Rachel mileah. He also loved Rachel beyond Leah. Okay. Imagine you have children, and you tell your children, I love all of you with all of my heart and all of my soul. I just love this child a little more. From the child's perspective, that's being rejected, period. You could love your children completely, but if you make it clear that this one is more beloved, not that you have anything against the others and you'll do for them and care about them, but this one just has a special place in your heart and your favorite, okay? That is rejection, period. So the Pasuk tells us, Vayehav gam et Rachel mileah. He loved Rachel, but beyond the love he had for Leah. So Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah. And Hashem saw that Leah, because for her, this was the same as being hated. Yes, for Leah, this was the same as being hated. Yaakov did not have to say anything or do anything or in any way even indicate in some negative way that he didn't like, wasn't happy with her, or that he was angry at her or felt betrayed by her. Hashem saw, Vayar Hashem kisnua Leah, and be careful here, that she names her child after this understanding that Hashem has seen her pain, but her next child is called Shimon, Vayishma. The difference between Hashem saw and Hashem heard is very great. Hashem seeing indicates a perspective from a distance. He looked down, he saw the big picture, he saw Leah's inner pain, he saw that she was righteous, Chazal say, and she didn't deserve to suffer. All the imahot were akarot, were barren, but Hashem gave Leah immediately a consolation prize to try to heal, give her something for her for her dedication, her desire to be connected to Yaakov, despite the fact that she had to understand that this would not endear her in Yaakov's eyes to do this. So Hashem immediately gave her children, and Hashem saw this from the, you know, from on high, and b'midas hadin, Chazal say, because she deserved it, b'midas hadin, because the situation called for it, he gave her a child. And she understood that, that Hashem had seen and had judged that she is worthy of a child, and she called this child Reuven. However, the next child that she conceived and she gave birth to, she called Shimon, because she says, Ki shama Hashem kisnua anochi. Hashem has heard that I am hated. Now, Hashem's hearing is already indicating something else. When you listen to somebody's distress, to their sorrow, to their, what the emotions of their heart, it could be that they are subjective. Perhaps they're objective, but very often it's subjective. It's how they feel, whether it's true or not. Shmia, hearing, indicates that Hashem, in a sense, listened to her the way she felt, be above and beyond the justice of her situation. Justice called for the fact that she should have a child here. But beyond that, b'midas harachamim, beyond midas hadin, midas harachamim, Hashem heard her personal distress and understood it from her perspective, so to speak, that she felt tremendous pain here, clearly emotional pain, and was willing to listen to how she felt, irregardless of the truth of the situation, and gave her another child. The fact that she named her children Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, and the pasuk tells us, Reuven, see, she calls him Reuven, ki Hashem saw my affliction, and maybe now my husband will love me. Second, Levi, Hashem heard that I am hated, and understood my pain, and so she's speaking again about her situation. And her third one, Levi, maybe this time my husband will accompany me, will be bonded to me. Clearly, are the names of the children, which she named, Yaakov had nothing to do with these names, okay, even though Levi, Chazal say, it says, Levi was already called, Al-Kain Kara Shemo Levi, was the Malach Gavriel called him Levi, that he will be the one to be Malave Hashem, to always accompany Hashem, never betraying Hashem, always ultimately be the Shevet for Kahuna and Leviah and the teachers of Klal Yisrael, that the Malach called him Levi. But you see that what Leah is doing here is trying to express through the birth of her children that perhaps she will achieve what she truly wants, was that her husband should love her. Chazal explained that she never really achieved this goal. She never really achieved this goal, and we'll be able to see that because even by her last child, Zevulun, her last child, Zevulun, she calls him Zevulun out of, again, the same hope that now her husband will consider her and will be grant her a good portion. Here, if you look ahead, here. Pasuk Chaf, Perek Lamed, V'tomer Lea Zevadani Elokim Zevet, Osi Zevet Tov, Hashem has given me a good portion, Hapam Yizbeleini Ishi, now my husband will be connected to me and consider me, beloved by him and a good portion, Ki Alatati Lo Shisha Banim, because I've given him 6 sons. So by her 6th son, she had not accomplished her goal. However, she named her fourth child Yehuda. Yehuda is clearly the mida of hoda'ah, of gratitude. Chazal say regarding Leah that she was the first person to give hoda'ah to Hashem, and everybody wonders how Chazal can make this statement, because simply, didn't Avraham and Sarah never gave hoda'ah, and Yitzchak never gave hoda'ah? I mean, it's hard to accept. Also, we see Adam HaRishon himself singing Shira to Hashem. My grandfather, in the most sensitive way, also explains here that what is unique about Leah's Hoda'ah, which is the first time ever in the world that Chazal see this type of Hoda'ah, is that Leah has come to understand that what she wants most here, for her personal satisfaction as her husband's love may never be. And yet she gives hodah, she gives thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for her situation, despite the fact that it's not what she wants. This is not hodah on things working out right. This is hodah on the fact that things did not work out right. This is hodah, thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and a sense of gratitude for whatever Hashem gives, although it's not what she wanted. And yet she's makabel, she accepts it. This is hodah for the tov and the ra, which is the highest madriga, to give thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu al ha-tov and al ha-ra, and what's good in our eyes and what's bad in our eyes. And we know clearly that she never achieved this goal, because when Rachel died, Yaakov moves his tent into Rachel's maidservant's tent, and not into Leah's tent. So here we have a situation of a person who wants very much a certain goal, and it's elusive. She cannot attain it. However, at the same time, she is in the process of building up a bias, a house, Klal Yisrael, and the children that she produces are the core of Klal Yisrael and produce Kahuna, Leviya, Malchus, Beis David, Mashiach. Look at the names that she gives the children. Look at the names she gives the children. Here, of Zilpah, okay. Pasuk Tet 9, Perek Lamed. Vatere Leah ki amda miledet. She saw that she had stopped giving birth after Yehuda, and she saw that Rachel gave Bilha, so she wants to have more of a connection, more of a share. So she gives Zilpah to Yaakov. And Zilpah conceives, and Leah calls this child Ba God. Look at Rashi. Ba Mazal Tov. Good fortune has come to me. And then Zilpah gives birth to another child, and she calls him Be'ashri, ki ishruni banot. The daughters will call me fortunate. So she calls his name Usher. Okay? Then when she conceives Yisachar, okay, she says, ki sachar, pasuk tezayin, ki sachar sachartikha bedudai b'ni, I have earned you as my reward with the dudayim, with these plants, these mandrakes or jasmines of my child. And she gives him, she gives her a child, and look what she names him. Natan Elokim Schari. God has given me reward, because I've given my shifcha, my handmaiden, to my husband, and she calls him Yisachar. Okay? Every one of the names of her children, after Yehuda, okay, after Yehuda, first she says, Hashem saw my pain, I'm hated, he heard my pain, I'm hated, maybe now my husband will. Then she accepts, she gives hodah al harav al hatov. Whatever the situation is, she is makir tov. The next children she bears, she calls ba mazal tov. The good fortune has come to me. The daughters will call me mu'ushar, fortunate. Hashem has given me great reward. This is called positive thinking, okay? Mental hygiene. Leah is the example of the optimistic, positive, makir tov, full of hoda'ah, full of thanks, despite the situation. She has inculcated in Klal Yisrael through the names of the children an awareness that al hara v'al hatov, for the good and for the bad, she is makir tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for whatever situation Hashem gives her. And Yisachar, who she named on that Hashem has rewarded me, became Yisachar, who is involved with learning Torah and being those that spread Torah and teach Torah to the Jewish nation. And Zevulun, the one she names, still in the last of her children, hoping, last of her sons, hoping that something will still get better, that Zevulun comes and supports Yisachar. And we have really in there the idea that these two ideas support each other. The idea that we do ishtadlus, to try to do as much as we can to improve a situation, but yet we consider it Hashem's gift and Hashem's reward, and have a karas hatov to Hashem for the situation as it is. This is Leah. So part of the house of Yaakov is built, part of the solid foundation of the makom that we carry with us are these ideas. My grandfather also explains something here, but we see in two episodes, one in the name Naphtali and one in the story of the Dudaim, because now we have to speak about Rachel. Leah brings in intense, absolute, inflexible gratitude to Hashem, optimism, positive, using every situation for the best. But do not imagine that there was, and the Torah doesn't really point out clearly that there was any animosity between the women. First of all, Rachel gave Leah to Yaakov, which is the greatest act of love ever possible. And because of this act of love, ultimately in the future, Rachel has an argument against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and she says, I allowed my sister to come in and take my husband. And you can't pardon Avodah Zarah, which is considered like also going to another man. And Hashem listens to her. And he gives her the comfort, saying, on your Zuchus, Klal Yisrael will come back from Golus. So here, though, she calls, when she finally gives her shifcha to Yaakov, and the shifcha Bilhah has a child, she calls him Naphtali, and she says, in Pasuk Ches, Niftalti im achosi gam yocholti. I struggled, I battled with my sister. Now you can read this simply, I battled against my sister, I battled with her, im. But the Torah doesn't say neged, I battled against my sister. The Torah says, Naftalti im achoti. I battled with my sister, v'gam yacholti, and I prevailed. A number of Mefarshim explain that she was saying, when she was calling this child Naftali, is not that she's not talking about fighting her sister, competing for who will have Yaakov's love. She had Yaakov's love. She didn't have children, which Yaakov already informed her is not his department. Don't get angry at me. It's Hashem has withheld children from you. So she's not fighting with her sister. She's fighting, not against her sister rather, she is like her sister fighting, like her sister is fighting, to have some share in the future Klal Yisrael. She's fighting im achosi, she's fighting with her sister. Her sister is battling in her way, and Rachel is battling in her way. They're both together in this, both battling to have some way, somehow a share in Beit Yaakov. Even if it means, for her sister it meant deceiving Yaakov. For Rachel, it meant allowing her sister to do this. Then it meant substituting the shifchos, okay? Eventually, you're going to see there's a barter system that goes on here. In a moment, we'll talk about that. They are both struggling in any way they know how to be part of the future Klal Yisrael, doing the best they can with their situation. Now, we mentioned two weeks ago, that all the imahos were akarot, were barren, okay? And we said that my husband's grandfather of Kantrovitz explains that the barrenness was a function of HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanting them to be completely cut off from their previous ancestors. So that according to biology, according to the rules of nature, Lavan and Bituel, and they do not have any continuity through us. These two girls were all barren. The fact that their wombs were opened miraculously and they were allowed to give birth is to indicate that the children coming from there have nothing to do, their new creations have nothing to do with the past. We do not come from these people. They are not our ancestors. But all of the women were barren because HaKadosh Baruch Hu imposed barrenness upon them. Whereas Rachel, by the way, the only one of all the Imahot that does not have a hay in her name. The hay, as you see, by Avraham and Sarah was introduced in order to allow them to have a child. All the Imahot have a hay except Rachel. She was barren, you know, not because Hashem imposed barrenness on her, because she was absolutely biologically barren. And therefore, the great nes that Hashem did for her, which is greater than all the other mothers, was to allow her to have children. So she was not fighting against Leah for what? She had the love, and the children was Hashem's department. She, like Leah, they were both battling in their ways to have a part of the future of Klal Yisrael. And look here at the story of the Dudaim one more time. Pasuk Yudalet, Vayelech Reuven b'yemei Ktzir Chitim. He goes out at the time of the harvest of the wheat. Vayitza Dudaim b'sadeh, and he finds jasmine or some type of plant that was considered an aphrodisiac, something that would help fertility. Vayaveo tamel Leah imon. He brought them to his mother Leah. He was trying to help his mother. He understood maybe another child would help her. Or he felt terrible. This is the same Reuven that went in and got made a protest when Yaakov moved the bed into Bilhah's tent. He was very concerned with the covet of his mother, and he was very obviously disturbed by the fact that and felt bad for his mother. And Rachel says to Leah, Tanina le, please give me midudai benech from the dudayim that your son has given you. And Leah answers the most incomprehensible answer because it doesn't make any sense logically. And she says, Hama'at kachtech et ishi, is it not enough that you took my husband and you also want my dudayim? I mean, first of all, my husband and the flowers. Okay? But also, she didn't take her husband, she gave her husband. This is a very difficult pasuk. And coming from Leah, who has established herself as hoda'ah, as a karasatov of gratitude for everything, obviously the pasuk needs to be read carefully. And Rachel answers her and says, "Lachein yishkav ima halayla tachat dudayim b'nech. Let him sleep with you tonight and come to you tonight in return for the dudayim of your children." So we have to understand here that something very important is going on in this conversation. This is not a simple little, you know, throwaway episode the Torah is recording. This is a fundamental conversation. Torah is trying to establish something here about this little switch, this barter between you can have Yaakov and give me the dudayim. Okay? Firstly, notice, again, Yaakov, he just goes along with whatever they tell him. Leah comes out, says, I earned you, I won you tonight, I paid for you, come to me. So he goes to Leah. It's very clear that the mothers are completely in control of building Klal Yisrael their way and naming all the children. They establish Klal Yisrael and identify the characters and the abilities and the powers within Klal Yisrael, clearly. Okay? And she says, she tells Yaakov, and Yaakov goes to her, and from this she gets Yisachar and Zevulun, which are clearly an indication by HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he agrees and he awards this attempt that Leah is making. Notice, before we get to the story of the Dudaim, that when Yaakov had to deceive, because his mother Rivka told him to, had to deceive his father Yitzchak, he was very ambivalent about it, okay? But he did it because Rivka said it was the right thing to do, and Yitzchak recognized that it was right and says, V'gam baruch yihyeh, and he should be blessed. Here you do not have somebody actually saying in the pshat about Leah, V'gam baruch yihyeh, let her be blessed, but it's clear by the fact that Hashem rewards her with these children, certainly Yisachar and Zevulun, that Hashem is saying, Gam baruch yihyeh. And she ultimately is buried in Ma'aras HaMachpelah. Hashem completely agrees with and supports whatever she does. Whatever she does, she does her best to try to be part of Klal Yisrael and to have a future. Hashem supports this. However, back to this little conversation of the Dudaim. Very difficult conversation to understand. So my grandfather explains this also. And I believe he was very, very sensitive to the dynamics of emotional, you know, what is going on emotionally, because he also, as we said in the beginning, explained the snua concepts. He says here that what Leah was missing most, and it pervades her whole life story, is a love of her husband. She's a human being who did not marry for any reason other than to be part of something great and holy, and wanted to be attached not just physically but spiritually to Yaakov, because he was of such great stature. She wanted this very much, okay? This is what she was missing. And it was all l'shem shemayim. And this was a great void, a great empty space in her heart, and we talked about emptiness and having being without an anchor and without a firm rock to stand on, and feeling without a framework, and creating out of that a makom, a solid place, strength, solidity. She had a void. She had an empty space, so to speak. But so did Rachel. Rachel had the love of her husband, but she had no children. Hashem did not allow her to have children to be part of Klal Yisrael. And it was incomprehensible because she gave Leah. What more can you ask for a person? Right? So Rachel sees the little boy Reuven coming with the dudaim, with the flowers, to Leah. And a searing pain rips through her, the feeling of having a little child come with flowers to his mother. What a beautiful expression of love, which she is not zocha to experience. So she says to Leah, let me experience for a moment the love of a child to a mother. So Leah says to her, but you have the love of a husband for his wife. I'm missing that. So they switch. for one moment you can have the feeling of the love of a husband for his wife, choosing you first, and I'll have the experience of the love of a child for the mother. These are not two rivals, chas v'shalom. These are two sisters who are both together working out a way to have the things that they feel are of utmost importance. And Hashem rewards this union of Yisachar and Zvulun for Leah, but Hashem also rewards this because now Rachel, Vayizkar, directly after that, Vayizkar Elokim es Rachel. Hashem remembers Rachel, Vayishma el Elokim, and he hears her cries, and he opens her womb, and she gives birth to Yosef. So you see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching from on high. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, not through direct nevuah, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not only condoning, but strongly expressing, so to speak, his appreciation and his value for what they are doing. And from these concoctions that the mothers go through to try to become part of Klal Yisrael, and by the way, later on, when she gives birth to Dina, Leah, which is her seventh child, Chazal say that when she became pregnant with the seventh child, she became afraid that if she has seven, then Rachel won't even have two, which is as much as the Shifchas. So Chazal tell us that Leah and Bilhah and Zilpah got together and davened that this child shouldn't be a son. And the child was, you know, the famous Chazal, this was Dina, okay? And Chazal say the reason her name was Dina was because she Dayenu Babanim. It's enough for us with the sons. Now this one shouldn't be a son. It should be a girl. And this was Dina. So you have here a very human story, okay, of best attempts being made. And what emerges from this is that this family is Machane Elokim. Yaakov, the Malachim bump into them. They are the Makom. And everything they instilled into their family, the self-sacrifice, the attempts at all, with nothing held back to try to make themselves part of a great future, okay? And the mid of Leah, which we said is enormous hoda'ah, and the mid of Rachel, which Chazal say is, Amida of Shtika, quiet, which is to be understood, and we're going to get back to it. We're not going to talk about it today because we will get back to this later. Not yet, in the future Parshios, okay? But we see here that these things become part and parcel of the functioning of Klal Yisrael. And they establish for us the secure foundation that Klal Yisrael will be built on and that will remain secure throughout all the generations and will allow the Jewish people to build up the nation, no matter where they find themselves, no matter what, with these same fundamental strengths. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu agrees that this is Machan Elokim, this is the camp of Hashem, this is the Makom. So what we're saying is, Makom comes in many forms. A person can be for their community a Makom, if their house is one, a house of great bracha and great simcha. But what if it's a house of great Mesiris Nefesh? What if it's a house of great accepting Yisurim Ba'ahava? What if it's of a house of just being great, not so blessed in many ways, but seeing the positive and being grateful for what Hashem has? There are many different mikomos, places, and they function on many different rules, and they have different dynamics and different energy, but each one of them can provide a very solid, fertile ground for strength, for love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, for bringing the Shekhinah down to this world, for being Beis Elokim. Many homes are set up on different premises. It's not a single direction. And yet each of these different models of homes can all become Beis Elokim and can provide the strength to carry the children and grandchildren and descendants through the generations. And this is what we see here. We see here in this parsha, and we see here also what we mentioned one, and what this will end a few weeks earlier, that Often, in the story of the fathers and the mothers, HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not actively interfere. Hashem leaves people to their own devices, to do what they do as best as they can do. And the hatzlacha that comes from it, which sometimes takes years and years to see, is Hashem's stamp of approval. And I want to end with this pasuk here. It wasn't until the end of Yaakov's life. Perek Mem Zayin, pasuk Lamed Aleph. Look at the words. Vayikruvu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. His day, he was coming close to dying. He calls Yosef, and he asks him to make a promise to him, and he should be buried, ultimately, in Eretz Yisrael, in Marsa Machpelah, with Leah. Okay? Vayomer Hishava Li, swear to me, and he swore to him. Vayishtachu Yisrael al Rosh Hamita, and Yisrael bowed down to the head of the bed. Chazal say here that when he asked to be buried in Maris Machpelah with Leah, at the end of his life, seeing the children that Leah bore to him and seeing how they developed and their kochot and what they would bring to Klal Yisrael, because ultimately everything comes, not everything, but the most important institutions come from Leah's home. By Yishtachuya, he bowed down al Rosh Hamita, and Rosh Hamita is a remez. What he's speaking about here is Leah, the head of his bed, so to speak, the one that produced the 6 children for him, actually 8 if you count the Shifcha, the primary mother of his children, the mother of most of his children. At the end of his life, he recognized everything Leah did, that it was L'shem Shemayim, and her sacrifice, and he bowed to it, and he has to be buried in Maris HaMachpelah. So not that to denigrate Rachel had a very important reason to be buried in the other place, but the fact that even in this story, not till things were completed in a certain way, not till many, many years had passed and things had played themselves out, was it evident that although it wasn't like by Yitzchak, he said, V'gam baruch yiyeh, and you should be blessed. He confirmed the bracha right there when Yaakov took it. It wasn't until much later that Yaakov himself, in a sense, although Hashem had said it all along, V'gam baruch ti, that she should also be blessed, Leah, with what she did, but Yaakov himself came to that hakara and deferred to that. So there are many ways, many paths to get to the same end. Okay, everybody, have a good week.